Good morning, Rabbi Sai. Today we begin Megillas Esther. Okay, unfortunately I didn't have that much of a chance to prepare, so we'll do the best we can for the first day. I'm not joking.
That's what I wanted to know.
What?
Every time we come to home, do you bang?
No, we don't bang. Okay, now I just want to... Okay, a little bit a few days ago I was in the bookstore, in the Sfarim store, and I was overwhelmed by the number of Sfarim. There's just, you know, Koheles, I had a very hard time. There were not that many Sfarim available on Koheles. I know people told me I should go online to HebrewBooks.org. You could find Sfarim, okay, but the common, the Sfarim which are easily available were not that many. It was not so simple to find some things that are for our purpose. It wasn't so easy, but Megillas Esther is really overwhelming. If you go to any bookstore, it's just there's no sheer to the number of Sfarim, and that makes it even more difficult. It makes it more difficult to navigate, to select something that is fitting for the shir. Okay, I'm going to just focus on what I've had success with in the past, which I've just read. Everyone is different. Is with the Eitzah HaMidrashim, and with the Sarasi Bamedinois, and with the Mishpitzais. We once used this. We didn't have this on Koheles or the other Megillah, so there was a Mishpitzais Zav on Megillas Esther, which is an excellent, excellent sefer. Okay, now the next thing is, so we'll see, as we'll go through, we'll try to figure out... We'll try to select various Sfarim and see what works for us. Okay, the next thing is that there are two major Targumim on Megillas Esther. Now, by the way, there's no Mitzudas David, okay? So that, unfortunately, we're not going to have the benefit of having a nice, simple parish. But as far as Targum, there are two Targumim. There is a Targum that appears in your edition, if I'm not mistaken, right? This is what I checked out. There's the regular, the classic Targum. And then there's what is called the Targum Sheni. Okay, the Targum Sheni is much more elaborate than the regular Targum. Now, ever since we've started learning the Megillos, I've had the benefit of using the sefer called Sarasi Bamedinois, which pretty much takes the Targum and he first translates it into Hebrew, and then he elaborates. Unfortunately, in this sefer, he chose the Targum Sheni for me, not for me. Unfortunately, he chose the Targum Sheni, and the entire sefer is really built upon the Targum Sheni. So that's not going to help us all that much with the regular Targum, and that for me is a very challenging difficulty because I don't know the translation of many of these words, and until I find the translation, which I'm hoping I will still find the translation, then it's going to be a little bit difficult. But yet, I still want to make an attempt. However, you're going to have to bear with me. You have to realize that I might not be able every single time to actually translate every single word, but if we get the gist of what he says, that for our purpose hopefully will be sufficient. Okay, with that in mind, let's begin. There's only one word of Hakdam I want to mention. I'm not a very big fan of Hakdamas. Hakdamas I like to do at the end. When you come to the end of the Sefer, then you have an appreciation for the Sefer, then you can come back and you can go to the Hakdama. But there's one idea which hit me when I started preparing is, why is Sefer Megillas Esther called Megillas Esther and not Megillas Mordechai? Mordechai, L'chora, was an equal partner with Esther in every single thing that happened. In fact, everything that Esther did was through the advice of Mordechai. Mordechai really, he called all the shots. And it says beferish in the end of the Megillah, Vatichtoiv Esther and Mordechai together composed the Sefer. One thing you'll tell me, Sefer Shmuel was called Sefer Shmuel because Shmuel wrote it. You know, you can go through all the various Sfarim and who were the ones, the Gemara records, who is the one who actually composed the various Chavdal and Sefer Tanakh. Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu wrote Sefer Chamish Chumshei Torah through HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but Megillas Esther seemingly was written by Mordechai the Esther. And if that's correct, we would assume that we can call the Sefer Megillas Mordechai the Esther, or call it Megillas Mordechai. It's not very common that Chazal give such emphasis to an Isha, Kokvuda Basmelech Pinima. Yet we call the entire Megillah after Esther. So the answer I've seen, I don't remember where I've seen this, but I think it's a very obvious answer, and that is Esther was the one who was Moiser Nefesh. It's true. Everything that happened was through the advice and counsel of Mordechai. And it can very well be Mordechai's stamp of, maybe he wrote the bulk of Megillah Esther. But who was the one that risked her life daily to go live with Ahasuerus? Who was the one that entered the palace? Who's the one upon whom it's Bachashera Vadati of Vadati? Who's the one that went to the palace on the time when she was not called and risked her life for Klal Yisrael? It was Esther. And that is the overwhelming theme of the Sefer. Mesiras Nefesh. To exert yourself, to give up of yourself for the honor of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and for Klal Yisrael, that is the overwhelming message of the Sefer, Mesiras Nefesh, and therefore, for that, it's appropriate that the Megillah is called on her name. Yeah? Pnima.
But
far from our perspective, we would have expected the Chazal to say, Esther, it's a woman, you know, it's not tznius, we should call a sefer on her name. What do you mean?
She was a malka.
A malka. Okay, but okay. The question is a good question, and the answer is a good answer also. She is the one that was Moiser Nefesh. And therefore, it's appropriate to call the Sefer on her name as a lesson for us. If you want to see results in this world, you have to be Moiser Nefesh. Yeah.
But there's another message, and that is that this takes place during the period of Esther Ponet.
V'yanochi Aster Aster Ponet. That's another answer given. Okay, there are many technical answers. You're right. V'yanochi, yeah.
But what my Rebbe, when I was so many years ago, I don't know if he was quoting somebody else, that he said that reality was that when they got ready to, they were writing down the story, Mordechai didn't want to publish it as a Megillah because Ahasuerus was still alive and it didn't present him in the best light, even though it didn't make him out as bad as he could be, and he wanted to wait until Ahasuerus died. Esther said, no, you got to publish it now. Because of that, she pushed to have it published and distributed
right
to Klal Yisrael. The next year, they already celebrated.
She was the one who pushed.
It's called it
right. So you're saying another answer, or Michal's saying an answer. There are many answers to this question. Esther was the one, even though it could very well be true that they both wrote it together, but Esther was the one that insisted to the Anshtag Nestor that it be preserved part of the Chof Dal Sefer Tanakh. Rabbi Michal said an answer. It's because V'anochi, the whole Makar for Esther, that's Harminayan, V'anochi, Haster, Aster, Panai. Well, what does it say in the passage?
It's about because of Esther, Hamalka,
it's called Toikiv, the Kaimasi. But there's another passage that says that Mordechai also, there's another Makar.
Yeah, also the Mordechai.
Mordechai.
So it says her first.
Okay, it says her first because she was one who there are technical answers. She says her first. The Gemara says she was the one that insisted that it should be part of the Chof Dal Sefer Tanach. Chazal, the Anshei Knesset, originally rejected her request because Kesoiv Zozi Kodan Bas Sefer Symbios Ne Yoshua. The Gemara Darshans, you only can write, it's only mentioned three times of Nechiah Samolik, not four times. There are many technical answers, but to me personally, the answer that stands out head and shoulders above all the other answers is, what is the story of Megillah Esther? It is a story of self-sacrifice for the Klal. Esther gave up a comfortable life. She was, according to Chazal, she was married to Mordechai. She was had a comfortable life. Possibly, there seemed that there was some possibility for her to escape, not to be taken in by Ahasuerus, to live with a goy. By living with Ahasuerus, she gave up the permissibility for her to ever return to Mordechai. She gave up everything for the big picture, for Klal Yisrael. She risked her life for Klal Yisrael. Mordechai also risked his life. There's no question about it. In fact, Chazal tells him Mordechai was killed. But Mordechai also risked his life. Mordechai lo yichrav lo yishtachaveh. Mordechai also put himself in mortal danger. But Esther's degree of Mesiras Nefesh was what stood out in the Megillah, and that is a lesson for every single person, v'chol esu, v'chol shah. If you want to accomplish something in life, sitting back on a reclining chair with your feet up is not going to do it. It requires hard work, effort, and to do extraordinary things in order to accomplish simple, even simple matters in L'shem Shemayim.
I have a contemporary example. Jump on my analogy. If the Holocaust kinnis that we had.
Yeah.
So the beginning, I think Rabbi Yosher Ber said we don't add. The Lutfaks didn't add. Who started? The Hasidim started adding because they had gone through the experience. And once they got it and moved it through Aguda, it became accepted throughout. So if you're involved in it, you have more invested in it. And you push it until it comes through.
Okay.
Yeah, we don't do history with the word if, but if Mordechai had shaped up, was it a vendetta of Haman against Mordechai? And if it was, why, if it didn't take place with Mordechai, with Haman, would Haman have had it in for the Jews?
Absolutely. The story began before Mordechai entered the picture.
Right, okay.
Absolutely. Okay, Dr. Fuchs, you have something you want to say? Okay, so let's
look. I don't know if we pass in the halakha, but I think there's a sheet that it says, based on the pasuk that was just read, that a woman is allowed to write the Megillah Esther. That's the kosher Megillah.
A woman is allowed to write Megillah? Okay, I don't know. I'm not familiar. Okay, could be. Okay, Vayihi Bime Achashverosh. Who Achashverosh? It was in the days of Achashverosh. Who Achashverosh? Hamelech Mehodu Yad Kush. He ruled from Hodu until Kush. Sheva V'yashrim Umeyam Medina. 127 countries, provinces, and whatever. Medina, various, not really clear exactly the precise definition of a Medina, but different communities, different cities, different countries. He ruled the entire world, he ruled half the world. Let's see Rashi. Rashi says, Vahi bimei Achashverosh, Melach Parasai. Rashi is coming to explain that he was the king of Persia, because there was another Achashverosh, and he was the ruler I'm forgetting already. Look at the Tzitzis Chachamim. Of Modai. Paras, he was the king of there was Nachashverosh, who preceded him, that was the king of Modai. Okay, let's see. Melech Paras Hoyesh, Shemolach Tachas Koresh, he ruled after Koresh. Approximately 70 years from the time of the end of the Golas. Now that will come to another, we'll discuss that another time. I'm not prepared for that now, but it will come to that at a different point in time when there was multiple calculations as to when the 70 years would end. The 70 years, Belshazzar made a calculation that the 70 years came to an end. At one point in time, he celebrated that 70 years have passed and the Jewish people have not been redeemed, and does not appear that any redemption is on the horizon. So he took out the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash, he took out and he celebrated, and at that night, Daniel, it was written to him, the Malach came and wrote on the wall about his destruction. Daniel came and predicted what would happen, and indeed that very night, Belshazzar, who was the grandson of Nebuchadnezzar, was killed, and that ushered in the new Malchus of Modai, Paras Umodai, and Modai was at that point ruled by Koresh, and Koresh, his son-in-law, they shared the Malchus, they alternated between them, Paras Umodai. Okay, well, Blinet will come to that, those details, at another point in time. But
still have that sheet from when we were doing the
meal? I don't know where they are. I'll have to find new sheets. I'll have to find a new... Okay, I know what you're talking about. That's from the... I know which stuff you're talking about. Okay, so believe that we'll come to that at another point in time, but the point over here is that it was Koresh, that Achashverosh ruled after the king Koresh, after 70 years from the time of Golos Bavel, who Achashverosh, Rashi says... Let's just look at maybe the Sifsei Chacham to clarify this point, okay? The kasha le'eza achashverosh hu. The point of difficulty is, which achashverosh are we referring to? Now this requires us to study history, and this is not at all clear. This indeed is not clear. There are certain mysteries that we really do not have clarity, and there's a disagreement among historians as to the names of the kings and who exactly they were and when they lived. And he writes over here, it appears there was more than one Achashverosh. Im Aviv shel Daryavish HaRishon ze lo hayimelech. If this is the father of Daryavish, of the first, it was Daryavish the first. We all know Daryavish was the son of Achashverosh. According to some opinions, Daryavish was the son, the biological son of Esther. Esther had a child from Achashverosh, according to some opinions. According to some. And that would then mean that this Achashverosh is the father of Daryavish. No. So he says, that's, is that what we're referring to? The kosha is Achashverosh, im ovim shol Daryavish harishon, ze lo haya melech. If this was the father of Daryavish, then he was not a king. Vim b'no shol Daryavish, there was another Achashverosh at a later point in time.
I don't know if he's asking for more than one Achashverosh. He's just trying to figure out,
at what point in time?
When did he live?
When did he live? Okay, when did he live? After Daryavish was Koresh, Nimshach Malchuso at Soif Shiv Mshana, Shalom Mibavel, Mordechai Hoye Meyole Goyle, Vizman HaMelech Hoye Adayin, Hoye Mordechai Begoyle, Lechein Perish Melech Paras. And that's why Rashi says, he tells us that he was a Persian king. Okay, he's just coming to tell us the timeline. Believe me, I'll try to bring in some, do some more research on this and try to go through the depth of what this Rashi means. I just didn't get a chance really to put all this together. Okay, Inami Dikashta Lamale Luchol Hasimon Mahavala Memar Hibi Melech Achashverosh Keshevis. Why did I have to give all these simonim? That's why he says he was Chayperish Mel Paras Hayomolach Tachas Koresh, he ruled Tachas Koresh, Alkein Hayitzach Lavdil Melechashverosh Achash Shahoyam Mibal Chayperas Hakam. Okay, so we'll leave this for now. We'll come to find exactly what point in time he lived. Next. Okay, the next point is who Achashverosh, who Berishai Mitchiloso Viat Saifai. Who is Behavayoso Yehei? He's consistent. From beginning to end, he maintains this original status. What is the significance of this? So I've seen in a couple of the commentaries, they say the same thing. We have a principle that when a person gets married, he changes. Marriage has the ability to change a person for the better or for the worse. We learn this, in fact, from Esav. Esav, he married Mochalas. Mochalas was the daughter of Yishmael. The merging of Esav and Yishmael took place end of last week's parasha? End of Toldos. So he married Mochalas 2 weeks ago. He married Mochalas. And Chazal said, why was her name called Mochalas? Lashon Mechila. That when a person gets married, HaKadosh Baruch Hu forgives him for all of his sins. And if this applies even to a non-Jew, the epitome of a non-Jew, Esav, when Esav married Yishmael, he was forgiven for his sins. Alachas kam v'kama, how much more so that applies to a member of Klal Yisrael. Now what is the significance that a person's sins are forgiven? So the answer is very simple. Because when a person gets married, he's under an influence of another human being. And that is a new beginning. It's a new beginning, your person is a new frame of mind. And that new frame of mind gives a person a new slate in life, even though in the past he may not have been on the mark, but now when he's under the influence of a new person in a marriage, things are completely different and it's a new beginning, so he's forgiven for his previous sins. So we would expect, here is what Rashi is coming to hear. This is an amazing idea that we would expect that if Achashverosh at some point in time married Esther, and now he was under the influence of Esther Hamalka, who was at Sadekes, so certainly that should have turned him around and should have made him to a good person. The answer is Achashverosh was so wicked. He was wicked to the core. Nothing could change him. Nothing could transform him into a new person. Who Achashverosh? You have to understand who we're dealing with. We're dealing with a person who is a Rasha. But not just a Rasha like Haman HaRasha. Even Haman HaRasha had a chance to turn around through marrying Mochalas. A new perspective in life. Or maybe even with this week's parasha, he meets up with Yaakov Avinu, Esav, he meets up with Yaakov Avinu, he cries, he kisses him. Nichloru racham of Ba'os HaShah. At that moment in time, there was a transformation. He saw something different. There was a change of heart. Maybe there's even hope for Esav. But Achashverosh was so wicked, even though he was married to Esther Hamalka, a tzadekes, it did not make a dent in his personality. Hu Achashverosh, hu birishoso, mitchiloso, the ad sofa. He died still not allowing the Beis Hamikdash to be rebuilt. Achashverosh was the one that put a stop order on the Beis Hamikdash, and when he died, the stop order remained. Oh, but he was married to Esther Hamalka. Shouldn't that have softened his wickedness? That's exactly the depth of what Rashi means to say. He was married to Esther, and normally marriage would change a person, machlas, even not make a dent. Yes, Rav Michal.
That's why Esther later was so fearful to go into Achashverosh.
In intense wickedness. He's an impossible person.
But it's not true of Esav, because of the famous man who said, we read the pasuk last week, who Esav Avinu, and where it says who, it says there are five.
Right. Targum Sheni mentions that, right. Targum Sheni, right.
So, I think maybe reading a little into, too much into Esav's character.
Uh-huh. He was wicked, he was just as wicked as Achashverosh.
Five of those on the negative side.
Okay, Hamoylech. Question is, why does it say the word Hamoylech? Why doesn't it say Hamelech? Why do we why are the vowels Hamoylech, who ruled? It should say, well, of course, the king is one who rules. The Iker is that we should give him the title, the honor of calling him Hu Achashverosh Hamelech. Why Hamolech? So Rashi answers the question, Shemolach me'atzmo, he was not rohoi limalucha. He was a stable boy. He would take care of the horses of Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar, as a young man, that's what his role was, to clean the tsoa, the excrement of the horses. That was his job, and somehow he was able to manipulate things to push his way to the top and become the melech. V'loy hoya mizera hamalucha. That's why it says hamalech. Mehodu v'ad kush. Do we know where these places are today? It's a big mystery.
Look on the border of Asia and Europe.
Yeah.
Asia and Europe, India and China. You look on the map.
Yeah. There's two places called?
There's one place called Hindi slash Kush.
Hindi Kush.
The Hindu Kush. The Hindi Kush. Hindi Kush on the map.
That's exactly what it is then. Hindi Kush.
Hindi Kush. So I don't know.
We don't know.
It's a theory. Right. Yeah.
Hamolech al Meya v'Esher v'Sheva Medinos, 127 Medinos, Kemo Shemolech Mehodu v'Yad Kush. So according to Rashi's first interpretation, what does it mean Hamolech? He was Molech Kama. You have to put a Kama, Mehodu v'Yad Kush. We have to read the words out of order. He was Molech on 127 Medinos, just like he was Molech on Hodu v'Yad Kush. What does that mean? Kemo Shemolech Mehodu v'Yad Kush, Sha'imdim Ze Eitzel Ze. They were near each other. And it's easy to be Molech on two countries when they're near each other. There's no difficulty in extending your power over a region. Likewise, just like he had a tight grasp on two cities that were next to each other, he ruled with power, shlit over the entire world. V'chein, we find something similar in Malachim. V'chein hu roide b'chol ever hanar mitifsach v'yad aza, that Shlomo HaMelech, he ruled over the entire other side of the river, over the entire world, mitifsach v'yad aza. What's the significance of these two places? Shohi roide b'chol ever hanar k'mo shohi roide mitifsach v'yad aza. So ever hanar there corresponds to Meya v'yesheva v'yeshemeya medina, and Mehodu v'yad kush corresponds to Tiftach and Aza. He ruled over the entire world with ease, just like it's easy, it's convenient to rule over two places which are next to each other. Okay, now before we see the Targum, we'll just discuss a few things. First of all, there's actually Midrashim that discussed this, that Rashi is really only quoting one source in the Gemara. Zemachleikis, Rav, and Shmuel. Chadam one says, Hodu v'yad kush were near each other. And the other man, them and says, no, they were from one end of the world to the other end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So, and Rashi here seems to be saying the opinion of Rav, the first opinion, that they were next to each other. However, some want to say that there's no machlokes between Rashi, between Rav and Shmuel. They recognized at that point in time, this is a very interesting idea, that the world was round. This is a very big mystery. At what point in time exactly did they come to recognize the world was round? 1492, that was the theory of Columbus, obviously, that the world is round. You don't fall off the world when you travel around the world. At what point did Chazal, going back to the time of the early Rishonim, did Rashi know that the world is round? Did the Rambam? The Rambam writes explicitly?
Yes.
They tried to make diukim. They don't.
No, he said specifically in one of the...
You sure about that?
It's
not so simple. They try to be medayik. They try to make the yukim in the Chazal. Yeah.
The Gemara has the picture of the world with the Avodah Zarah. It's round.
The Gemara, they acknowledge the world was curved. There are stories that indicate they acknowledge that the earth was on a, there's a dome. It was on a curve. So if you can stand it, and you could even see, the naked eye can see, if you stand in the right location with the ideal conditions, it's possible for a human being to actually see the curvature of the earth. You have to be in the right mountain and the right. But it's still, it's very possible they believe, because this is really what the Gemara says at face value, the earth is a dome, but when you come to the end, you fall off. So it's not a contradiction to believe the earth, not flat. Okay, that's we say the earth is flat. We don't mean flat. Acknowledge the earth was curved, but that it was completely circular, that you can go from one end of the earth to the other end of the earth. This is debatable if it was known, if there were different theories. According to some early, it's not the sources are not that early, but this is a debate that some want to suggest. That's the machlokes Rav and Shmuel. Rav says they don't really argue that they do represent the two ends of the earth when you travel over the entire earth. So you go from one end to the other by circling the earth in the opposite direction. So on the one hand, it's true, they are next to each other. Hodu v'Yalkush are right next to each other. But they also represent the two ends of the world when you travel in opposite directions. Okay, now this is Hodu v'Yalkush. Now, we have over here this idea of 127 Medinos. So the Medrash, a very popular Medrash, that says that why did Esther merit to be the queen who ruled over 127 Medinas? Because she was the Bas Bitoy of Sara Imenu, who lived for 127 years. So what is the significance of matching up Esther with Sara Imenu? So the connection is obvious. They both were abducted. And that's really what Chazal HaTorah Rabbi Akiva was trying to emphasize in these words. Sara was abducted by Paro. And yet she was Oymed bin Isoyan. Hashem protected her. Nothing happened to her. Paro was unable to touch her. Ki Otsar Hashem, Avimelch was Paro as well. Nothing happened to her. Likewise, Esther was taken by the superpower of the world, by Achashverosh. And just like Esther, in her marriage, she was spared. Nothing happened to her. Just like Sarah Imenu was protected. Likewise, the parallel to Sarah, Esther, who was also abducted by Achashverosh, was also protected. Okay, that's one idea. Another idea why we connect the two is this. Now you have to go back to where this comes from. This comes from Rabbi Akiva. The Gemara says Rabbi Akiva was giving a shir. The Talmidim were dozing; they were falling asleep, and he tried to awaken them. And he told them this: this Mamre Chazal, Esther Imenu. She lived for 127 years, and in that merit, her granddaughter Esther ruled over 127 Medinos. What exactly was Rabbi Akiva trying to bring out to the Talmidim? So some of the Mefarshim explained, because the Talmidim were dozing off just for a few moments. They were listening to the Shir, they were a little tired, so let's hop a nap, 10 seconds, 20 seconds. We'll put our head down while he's just reading over the simple Gemara, Rashi, Tosfos, before Rabbi Akiva gets to the meat, the chidushim, we can take a little nap and everything will be okay. We can steal a few moments. So the answer is, think about it. If the entire world is made up of 127 Medinos, every Medina is hundreds of miles. And every Medina, there are cities, and there are districts, and there are regions, and there are avenues and blocks. In Manhattan, on one block, I mean, the real estate of one block in Manhattan is hundreds of millions of dollars, maybe even more. Maybe it's close to a billion. I don't know what it is. The value of real estate. So therefore, every moment of Sarah Imenu's life added up to another city block. Okay, that's the idea. So he was telling his Talmidim that by you wasting a moment, you're giving up a city block. Think about how much you would be worth if you even owned today one building. If you live 127 years, and those 127 years translate into 127 dinos to the entire world, so break it up. Break up 120 every year. Every second, it can be broken down into another building. So he was telling the Talmidim, it's not kedai even to waste a moment. Even one moment, you're losing an infinite value. Okay, another idea, I saw what the significance of it says in the Gemara that the Talmidim were misnamnein. And he was trying to tell them that they were living in a very difficult time. We know that Rabbi Akiva lived during the Doroi Shel Shmat. There was more than one Dor Shel Shmat, but Rabbi Akiva certainly lived in the Dor Shel Shmat, and the proof is he was killed. He was one of the Asara Harugei Malchus. Life was extremely difficult for this generation. The people in this generation began to be misnamnein. Misnamnein means they were dozing off. And symbolically, what it means is they were giving up from Geula. They figured, look, things are very difficult. The Romans, they're trying to destroy us. They're succeeding in destroying us. That's it. It's time to throw in the towel. It's all over. The Beis Hamidrash has been destroyed. There's not much we can do. The generation was a generation of being misnamnein. He said to them, don't give up. Look at Sara Imenu. Basically, he's saying we have Zuchus Avos. The Zuchus Avos, the Zuchus Imos, the Beris Avos, and Sara Imenu. She lived for 127 years in her merit. Esther Hamalka, the world, there was never a time in the history of the world when Klal Yisrael was in such danger. Did not exist. La hashmid, la harog, ula abed es kol hayehudim minar viad zokin biyom echad. There was never such a time of danger like the time of Purim, and yet what saved Klal Yisrael? Esther. And what was her guardian angel? Where did she derive the source to be spared? Her source of salvation came from Zuchus Imohos, from Sara Imenu. So Rabbi Akiva was telling the Talmidim, don't be misnamnim, don't be miyayesh from Geula. Klal Yisrael has Zuchus Avos. The Zuchus Avos, the Zuchus Imohos, that will guide us through to the time of Mashiach.
Who says this?
Who says this? I saw this in the Oitzim Mefarshim. I don't remember the Oitzim Mefarshim in the green Oitzim Mefarshim. I don't remember exactly who says this. Okay, now before we go further, we're going to mention this in the Targum in a few moments. We're going to read the Targum in a few moments, but I saw a very interesting idea from Rav Zalman Sirotskin. I actually have a sefer, Zalman Sirotskin. Everyone knows he wrote the sefer Oznayim LaTorah, 5-volume classic sefer on Chamisha Chumshei Torah, and he also wrote a sefer on Megillas Esther. It's not a likut. It's he actually wrote, composed a sefer on Megillas Esther, and he has a very interesting idea, which I think is a bit controversial. We're going to read the Targum in a few moments that tells us every time it says the word Vayihi is Lashon of Tsar. Vayihi is Lashon of Vay, woe. It was a time of great tsara for the world and for Klal Yisrael. Vayihi b'mei Achashverosh, when the world had such a leader, the leader of the free world wasn't the free world, but the leader was Achashverosh. Some say he was a Melech Tipish, a Melech Chacham, whatever he was not a good person, he was not a person for the job. And it was a very great tsara. And certainly it was a very great tsara for Klal Yisrael. He was willing to listen to Achashverosh. In Shoftim,
In Sefer Shoftim it also begins Vayhi Bimei Shefot HaShoftim Vayhi in the pasuk. What?
That's Rus.
I'm sorry, we have Rus. Vayhi Bimei Shefot HaShoftim, and then it goes on to say Nochemol. It says the word Vayhi twice. That's a different one.
That's one of the examples the Torah gives.
Okay, but in Sefer Rus it says the word Vayihi twice. Vayihi Bimei. The Gemara talks about does say Vayihi or Vayihi Bimei. Okay, we'll maybe mention that in a few moments. But it says there in the beginning of Sefer Rus, we actually have here Sefer Rus. Let me open up to the first pasuk. Okay, but then it says it twice. Vayihi Rav, Vayihi Bimei Shefot HaShofetim, Vayihi Rav Varetz. It says the word Vayihi twice. Shav Zalman Tzorah, so the Chazal, in fact, they dash from why did it say Vayihi twice? One Vayihi, it was this Tzorah, and it was another Tzorah. But he says a very interesting drush. Ein miut achar miut elo l'rabbis. When you have a double negative, in halacha and Talmud always comes to be marbe. There's always something coming to be added. A double negative means we're going to add. It's true. In the time of Rus, it was a very difficult time. Shefot hashoftim ish hayosha be'enav yaseh. People were judging their judges, and it was a famine. It was a very difficult time. But what came from the story of Rus? All of the tzorahs led to something very great. The birth of Mashiach. So sometimes, Rachmana Litzlan, when there's a tzara, there's a silver lining in the tzara. The silver lining, you have to find what that silver lining is. The time of Rus, the silver lining was the birth of Mashiach.
But in the... It also says double.
Okay. So there's always a silver lining of Geula. You have to study. But here...
That thought process comes from the verse Ben Avastarim, Vayi Hashem Yishbor.
Yeah.
So it's also, according to those that say just the word Vayi alone is...
Yeah. Or Vayi Bimei.
But the reality is, it was that they were going into slavery... But it was also the
Aschalus
of the Gula at
right.
the end of the story.
So there's a silver lining in the Tzara. So Zalman Sarasin says something very controversial. Sefer Megillah says it only begins with the word Vayihi once. And he says, even though we all know it's true, Purim, Kimu v'Kiblu, it's a wonderful Yom Tov, we see HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Teva, and everything that Purim captures. But the bottom line is, we would have been better off had the tzara not happened at all. Because in the big picture of things, when we started, was there a Beis HaMikdash? No. It was during the time of Golos. There was no Beis HaMikdash. Achashverosh issued a stop order. We went through the entire story of Purim. We came on the verge of genocide. We came that close. We survived. After we survived, what happened? Nothing. Mordechai was demoted. He was only Rotsu L'Roi V'Echof. According to Chazal, that was not a Maila. Only Roiv, not Kol Echof. Achashverosh continued business as usual. There's a stop order will remain. As long as I'm alive, there will be no Beis HaMikdash. Nothing changed. Esther, V'Chasher, Avadeti, Avadeti. So, in the big picture of things, did we come out ahead?
No, we got out from under.
It's a shocking thing to say, because if you'll ask the average yeshiva bachar, they'll tell you what's the most important holiday in the year. Purim. Vimei ha-purim o'ele lo yavu mitoch ha-yehudim.
That'll be
the time Mashiach
tomorrow says.
Purim is the Yom Tov. All of the other Moadim will be bottled, but Purim will never be bottled. Purim is a time when you can see a Kadosh Baruch Hu in nature. Okay, that's true, but you have to interpret Chazal on many, many layers. There are many layers to Chazal. And in this respect, in the respect to, in world history, what have we gained from the miracle of Purim? Well, we've gained a lot, but in the big picture of things, it would have been better had the tzara not happened at all. In the time of Rus, Vayihi Bimei Shefot HaShoftim, Vayihi Rav Baretz, Ein Miut Achar Miut Ela L'Rabos. Very great tzara. The death of Machlon and V'Chilion, the death of Elimelech. Naomi was exiled. There was a famine. There was starvation. Terrible tzoros. But it was worth it. You know why it was worth it? We got Rus. And from Rus came David, came Melech HaMashiach. So there was a silver lining in the tzara, ein miut achar miut elo l'rabbis. But Megillas Esther only begins with one vayihi. It was a tzara, Baruch Hashem, we survived. After the fact, there's what to learn from it, there's what to study, there's what to gain. But you know something? It would have been better had we not had this tzara to begin with.
But isn't it different? The tzara of Rush was a singular tzara to her. The whole story is focused on one individual. And her.
It was a period. It was a tzara for Klal Yisrael.
But Megillas Esther is literally for Klal Yisrael from start.
Well, Rus is also for Klal Yisrael. Rus, there was a famine thing. Okay, I hear your question. I have to think about it. It's one person. Is that on?
Well, I think
okay, I hear the question.
Well, this the whole idea is that since Bnei Yisrael was on the verge, or a lot of them were miayish on the whole situation of the Gula already, that at least we could see now the big picture, that it's a lesson that God is working behind the scenes, even though we don't know, since we say it's Aster Aster Bonim, but that things are happening that we don't know. So later generations, God had a plan to, this is what we sit and learn, because we are in Golis for so long, yet we learned from this experience that God is always there, even if we don't see it. So here we're writing this down so we can recognize God's handiwork. By the way, the Eben Ezra makes a very poshut shot on the pasuk. He says, the reason it says two Achashverosh, since as you opened up and you said there's two Achashverosh, so in case you want to know, it's Artachshasta, but this is to limit it and explain it. Who Achashverosh HaMolech Mehodu V'yad Kush? This was Achashverosh number two, that was Molech Mehodu V'yad Kush. I hope that gives you more information and now you know what I'm talking about.
Okay. The historical reference.
Okay. That's why he's saying those.
One moment. Esther and Achashverosh had a son, Dayovish.
Dayovish. But he was Dayovish the second.
Yeah.
There was a Dayovish that was a Dayovish before from the
right,
kings of the Koresh.
Second, he's the one who...
Yeah, right, that's what the Sivsei Chacham is coming to address.
Whether he was the son or not.
Okay, hopefully we'll put everything in perspective in the writer. We'll put the dates. There's a lot of material on this exactly. There's even new things today that have been revealed to try to put the story of Megillas Esther in the right historical context.
Is this beginning to describe this elaborate whatever? Achashverosh, king, did they have to tell us how much he ruled at all? I understand the drasha of Rabbi Akiva, the Gemara. Why wasn't this to tell about it? Like, you know, if I gave a biography of a president Nixon, oh, he was this, he was that. Is that the purpose of it here, to give us an understanding of where he came from?
I don't know the answer. I don't know. First of all, when it says over here he was Moilach 127 Medinos, does that mean he ruled the entire world? Rashi seems to say yes. Look at Rashi. Rashi here says, Meir Hamoilach al Meir of the Eshem of Shem Medinos, Kimoish Moilach Mehodu Yad Kush. Sha'imdim Ze Eitzel Ze. No, you're right. So Rashi does not say the entire world. According to one opinion, this was half of the world. He lost half of the Medinos. They rebelled against him. The question is, at what point in time did they rebel against him? So some say after he killed Vashti. You know, Vashti was like Princess Diana. Everyone was obsessed with her, the whole world. So when Achashverosh decided to kill her...
She was one of the seven most beautiful...
Most beautiful women. So when Achashverosh decided to kill her, there was a rebellion. There was a rebellion. This is what you do to our celebrity? To our hero? This is what you do? So half of the world rebelled against 120, an additional 120, 26 it says, an additional 126 Medinos rebelled, and all he was left with was 127. That's one approach. There are many variations of this medrash. And exactly at what point, when the Megillah begins, how many Medinos did he control? This pasuk appears, according to most commentators, as a general description describing the entire era. We really begin, the Megillah really begins with pasuk beis, Bayamim Ohem. First, let's give you some background. We'll describe an era. There was the king Achashverosh. He ruled over 127 Medinos. At what point in time in his rulership of the 127 Medinos did the story of Purim take place? That's another issue. That will be established when we begin with Bayomim Ohem. This pasuk is a general introduction to the story of the period and the era. Belined will come back. Let's run through the Targum very quickly. Vayehi, will just try to do the best. I don't know the translation of every single word. We'll try to do the best. Vayehi, Vahava Biyomei Achashverosh, Shu Achashverosh, Debiyomohi, Betilas. The most important thing was, what does this relate to us? Betilas Avida Space Elokoho Rabbah, the base Hamigdash, the construction was Botel. It was Achashverosh that issued a stop order because they sent a sitna, an accusation that the Jews are rebelling. Koresh gave permission to the Jewish people to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. It was in progress. And then there was a letter sent to Achashverosh that they are rebelling. And he said, stop working until we investigate. V'havas betila, it was bottle, achnas tartain lidaryovesh, until the second year of his son. Begin atisa devashti chayef, due to the sin. Atisa, if I'm not mistaken, means due to the sin of Vashti Chayefta, Brate de Evel Merodach. Who was Vashti? Vashti, the evil one, was the daughter of Evel Merodach. Who was Evel Merodach? Bar Nevuchanetzar. He's giving us the Yichus. The Yichus is that we have Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar had a son, Evel Merodach. Evel Merodach had a son, had a daughter, Vashti. And Vashti was married to Vashti was married to Achashverosh. This was the granddaughter. V'al d'lo shavkas l'mivnei yos space mukdasha, and because she did not allow them to build the Beis HaMikdash, iskazar alo d'l isketolo, it was decreed upon her to be killed. Artilo, artilasa. Artilosa. Lisketola artilosa. I don't know what it means, artilosa.
Me in a nude. Naked.
Naked?
Yeah.
Okay, so she was killed.
Like you find other machavim when they.
That's what they're very good.
Okay.
Naked.
So it's the same.
Begin atisa. So when the previous word, what is that? Atisa means the curse. The previous word. Achnas tartein l'dayavish, begin. Different. Okay, fine. So she was killed. So therefore, she was the one that influenced. So here the Targum is telling us something that is really fascinating. That it was her influence when the letters arrived from Eretz Yisrael that the Jews are rebelling. The sitna, the false accusation that the Jews are rebelling. Achashverosh had to make a decision. Who is the one with whom he consulted to make this decision to prevent the Mikdash from being built? It was Vashti. It was her influence. And that is why the Targum says it happened, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought about that she was killed. She died. V'uf, ihu al, v'uf, and also, ihu he, Achashverosh, al, ditzoyis, he listened le'eta to the advice. I'm sorry, etisa means the advice. Begin etisa, the advice. Because he, Achashverosh, listen to the advice, iskatsu yomo, he had a short life. The ispeleg malchusei, and his malchus was divided. He died prematurely. He died before his time.
Oh, who died?
Achashverosh. Achashverosh died before his time, and his malchus was diminished. Was reduced to 127 medinos. V'ispeleg malchusei. What would he mean? Dimin kadmastina, before this event, hava kol amamaya, he ruled the entire world. Umaya, v'lishonaya, v'aparchaya, kivishon, he conquered, Tichos Yodoi was controlled under his hand. Until this point in time, until he issued the stop order, he controlled, he ruled over every single nation, every language, every village was controlled under his hand. Chaan law
is originally under Nebuchadnezzar, but he conquered the whole.
He yarshed it from Nebuchadnezzar.
And, Koresh.
From Koresh. Koresh yarshed it from
Nebuchadnezzar.
He conquered, right? He can't. But now, at this point in time, at the time of the Megillah, law ishtabdu min lay. They did not serve him. The world was not loyal to Achashverosh min deglal hachi, because of his sin, the sin of issuing the stop order. Uvosar kidon iskalei kodem Hashem daasidu Vashti liskitala. Afterwards, it was revealed before Kodesh Baruch Hu that Avashi would be killed. Daasid hu limisav have Yos Esther, and Esther would take her place. Tehi mibnas Sarah. She is a descendant of Sarah Dechayo. So here's where Rabbi Akiva quoted Rabbi Akiva. Now we know the secret. When Rabbi Akiva, he told this to his Talmidim, he was really taken from the Medrash, from the Targum. Dechayos Me'o V'yashrin Ushva Shenin, who lived 127 years. Is Yahavas Le Archa. She was given. She was obviously Arucha Umeloch. He was given an extension. Umeloch al Hindiya Rabba, the great Hinda. Viad Kush until Kush min Madincha the Hindiya from the Medina of Hindu Rabba viad Ma'arva to Kush, the other side of Kush Meya the Estrin Ushva. Pilchin, 127 Medinas. Okay, so
this is Ethiopia.
I don't know. It's not clear. You have to.
So far,
let's see. Now, so far, what do we learn from the time? We learn from the time over here is that the story is taking place in the time when Belshazzar, when it was the advice of Vashti that prevented the Mikdash from being constructed, and therefore, in punishment, she was executed. And her tush taken over by Esther, the granddaughter of Sarimenu, who lived for 127 years. And in that merit, even though Achashverosh was not meant to rule over the world anymore because of his sin, he was given 127 medinos. Tosefta, an additional comment. Chamisha ksiv b'hon vayihi. There are five different events, eras, upon which it says word vayihi. Lishna devai. The word vayihi is a lashon of tsar. And the Elaine, here they are. The Elaine, Inun, here they are. Vayihi bimei Amraphel. The time of Avraham Avinu. Amraphel de Iskanshu Malchin. All of the kings gathered together to rebel against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'lo haviriva v'charba ba'alma. There was no such thing as war. This was the first world war. There was always peace in the world until the time of Amraphel. Ad osa Amraphel until Amraphel. Omar until he wanted to go to war. Next. V'hi b'mei shavad ha-shayftin. V'chol v'ay havi b'yoy mehoin. And there was a lot of vai. What was the vai? Man vai. What's the vai? What was the tsar that exists in the time of Rus? Hava mitul. Man vai hava mitul. What was the vai that existed? The hava kafna the ara. There was a famine. Tirse vaihi rabaretz vaihi. Next third case. Vaihi bimei ochoz vai hava biyoma. What was the vai? Man vai hava. There was a war. The king of Aram waged war against Ochos Melech, the king of Yehuda. Umakse Basrei, Nalev Yehuda, let's go to Yehuda, Unikitsena, let's cut it up. Let's wage war against Yerushalayim. Mikanat Alame, Dukulhon, Dersiv, Vayhi, Bimei, Divai. Therefore, we can learn every time it says, Vayhi, Tsar, Vahavim, Min Yomi, Almo, Min Shnin, Kad, Meso. Kad havo okon, and from that day until yoime alma umenshnin kad meso kad havo okon asyon al beis Yisrael, whenever it came upon them when a tzara came upon Klal Yisrael, hava matzlon, they would pray kadam avuhon divishmaya, from time immemorial. Min yoyme olma min shnin kad meso means from time immemorial, whenever there was an okon, a tsara, that came upon Klal Yisrael, the solution was to be mispalal. Hava matzlon kadam avuon divishmaya, va'ane yoson, and Hashem answered. The chsiv, it says, vayihi at lo yikrun, terem yikra, va'ani e'ene. Ad lo yikrun, ano ane, ad lo yimalulun. Before you speak, ano ishmo, I will answer. So what is the time where you're telling us? It was a time of tzara. And what was the solution? The solution was tefillah. So it appears the time was telling us that this is the essence, this is the hakdama to say to Megillas Esther, that at a time of tzara, leich, Kinois eskol hayehudim vitzumu olav v'al tochel v'al teshtu shloishes yomim laila v'yom. That is the message of Megillas Esther, to be mispaled to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Netzar and HaKadosh Baruch Hu will answer us. Okay, now before we go further, we want to make sure a lot of different. Yeah. What? So it's a machlokes in the Gemara. The Gemara is.
says Vayhi Bimei.
Oh, Bimei, okay. So every time it says Vayhi Bimei, sometimes it says Vayhi. There are two opinions in the Gemara if it has to say the word Vayhi Bimei or just the word Vayhi. Okay, now there's another, just to mention some Mamori Chazal. Achashverosh comes from the word. Achashverosh comes from the word Achi Rosh, the brother of the head. Who is the Rosh? The Rosh is Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar was called the Rosh. It's a pasuk. And who Reisha did the Hava? Daniel, when Nebuchadnezzar saw the dream, he had a dream of this monster. Daniel went and interpreted the dream for Nebuchadnezzar, and he told him that this image that you saw in your dream, the head of this creature is you. And who Reisha did the Hava, you are the head of gold. So we find the pasuk in Daniel that tells us that Nebuchadnezzar, he is the one who is called the Rosh. Now we on the Chazal take this a step further. Achashverosh, his name is Achi Rosh. It's a new trick in Chazal. Do them many times. They take words which can be secular words, and they find some allusion to some idea that's found within. He was a brother to Nebuchadnezzar, just like Nebuchadnezzar prevented the building of the Beis Hamikdash. So too, Achashverosh continued in that fashion. He issued a stop order on the construction of the Beis Hamikdash. He was a brother. Okay. Ochi v'roish. Ochi v'roish. Binyamin's children. They're the ones who are the antidote. They're the ones on their chelik, the base Hamikdash is built. Very interesting. Okay. No, it's symbolic. It's not a real brother. It's not a real brother. It's symbolic. He behaved in the same fashion. Okay, let's just jump in very quickly to the next pasuk. Now we really begin the Megillah. Bayamim Mohem Kesheves Hamelech Achashverosh Al Kisei Malchuso, upon his throne, Asher B'Shushan Habira, in Shushan Habira. Now let's see Rashi. Rashi, Kesheves Hamelech Achashverosh Kesheniskayim Hamalchus Biyado. He waited 3 years. He's now going to make a party. A party that's going to last for 180 days. Invite the entire world to celebrate. The celebration, what was the celebration? The celebration was that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has not redeemed the Jewish people. It's been 70 years since the end of the Churban. 70 years have passed and the Beis HaMikdash has not been rebuilt and there is no redemption for the Jewish people. So it's now time to celebrate. I have nothing to worry. My Malchus is firm. My Malchus is secure. So that's why he waited 3 years. This is the simple understanding. They interpret this in other ways in Masechta Megillah. Kesheves Hamelech. Well, I think that's what the more Masechta Megillah says. Masechta Megillah says that 3 years into his Malchus was 70 years from his calculation. Well, let's learn later on the various calculations of the 70 years of Golus. That's what Rashi says. The second interpretation, according to the first interpretation, takes 3 years to grow into the Malchus. Well, that didn't happen yet. Vashi's still alive.
All right, you understand, but that's what the Mefarshim will say. That first he wanted to kill Vashti so he can get rid of the Persian part. He was a Mede, she was Persian, he was like Prince Philip to Elizabeth, and he would kill her and then he would have the Malchus. Even though that wasn't
a okay, that was even a greater solidification of his Malchus. That was going to happen later on. We'll do the Targum next week, but I just want to say to share a few short ideas. The commentators, they take note of the word Kisheves. If we were writing in the beginning, we would write it Bisheves. It would appear that the correct word Bayamimohem Bisheves Hamelech Achashverosh, when he sat Bisheves, why does it say Kisheves? So the answer is, it's teaching us a lesson that there's no such thing as a world power, a leader having true security in his position. Ki is the Chof HaDimyoin. It appears, you turn on the television, you see presidents, power, you see heads of state, they appear to be secure. It appears they have solidified their position of power. No such thing. The only one that has power in this world is the Ribbono Shel Olam, and by extension, Klal Yisrael. The Malchus David, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives power to Klal Yisrael, then the Malchus is secure its Bishavis. And in fact, I think it says by Shlomo HaMelech, it says there, I don't have the pasuk in front of me, it says there, pasuk by Shlomo, it says the word Bishavis. Achashverosh, and all that come in his wake, all that follow in Achashverosh, is only Kishavis, the Chof HaDimyoin. It appears they're secure in their position, but they're not secure. Okay, another, now we have over here Shushan Habira. Now, there's an interesting question. Why is it that Nebuchadnezzar, when he is described as living in, was it Nebuchadnezzar? Or was it, there's another king who described, so who is it? There's another king who, give me one moment. Here it is. It does not tell us where Shushan HaBira is. Shushan HaBira is in Elam.
Oh.
Okay, in Daniel, it says...
Ezra brings us down this
comment. In Daniel, Nebuchadnezzar, v'ani b'Shushan HaBira, asher b'Elam HaMedina. So when Daniel was speaking to Nebuchadnezzar, and he was making mention of Shushan HaBira, he told us where Shushan HaBira is located, which country? The country of Elam. So why here, why in Daniel is Shushan HaBira related, connected to Elam? And here in Megillah, we don't mention Elam. So the answer is Nebuchadnezzar, when he gave kavod to Yerushalayim, when he described Yerushalayim, he said Yerushalayim asher b'Yehuda. Shushan HaBira is the parallel to Yerushalayim. Like this week's Pasha, Esav said to Yaakov, Nelcha l'negdecha. It's always zel umazeh. It's always that if klal Yisrael kishakom zeh noifal zeh. It's always zel umazeh. The capital of the nations of the world was Shushan HaBira because that's where the Malchus was located. Why don't we give cover to Shushan HaBira by calling it Shushan HaBira Sher Be'elam? The answer is because Achashverosh, when he described, referred to Yerushalayim, he did not give it kavod. He just said Yerushalayim. He never called Yerushalayim Asher B'Yehuda. Nebuchadnezzar referred to Yerushalayim with the expression Yerushalayim Asher B'Yehuda. Therefore, Mida Keneged Mida, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Yichus to his capital, Hashem said, you are in Shushan HaBira Asher Be'elam. But Achashverosh, that did not give cover to Yehuda, and in fact he stopped the Beis HaMikdash, he did not give cover, so we just say he lived in Shushan HaBira without the title of Elam. Okay, another two quick ideas. We have here the word Kesheves. Why does it say here Kesheves? So Chazal tell us the reason Sheves alludes to Shabbos. Sheves and Shabbos have the same letters, and the reason why the Geula did not yet come was because of the punishment for the lack of observance of Shabbos Kodesh. Pasuk says, "Bayomim Ohem." On those days, they were. Reisi v'Yehuda dorchim gitois b'Shabbos. On those days, I saw they were crushing grapes on Shabbos. And the pasuk is alluding the reason why. In other words, the reason why the geula had not yet come. I'm going to see this idea later, but it's not etched in stone which calculation of 70 years is truly the correct calculation. We're going to see everyone had a different calculation. Baal Shetzer had a calculation. Achashverosh had a calculation. Daniel had a calculation. Everyone came up with their own calculation. Now, Baal Shetzer was no fool. If he made a calculation, his calculation was 70 years, there must have been something to it. He was no fool. He knew what the calculation. He knew a calculation. Achashverosh, when he made a calculation, he was also no fool making the calculation. And yet they were all wrong. Is it the pshat they were all wrong? Or is it the pshat you can be right if Klal Yisrael was Zoicha, then you would have been right. It's just like all the different calculations we have for the coming of Mashiach. We have many calculations, when will Mashiach come? So many Gedolei Yisrael of the generation have told us that according to the calculation, this is the time that's Mesugul for Mashiach to come. And they're right. It's an ace rotzon of when Mashiach is roi to come, because there is truth. The interpretation of the Zman is correct. It's just unfortunate because we are not where we're holding spiritually, we're going to have to be Samech on a different pshat in the Pasuk for a different calculation. So here's the same exact thing. Achashverosh was correct. He made a calculation of 70 years. And Mashiach should have come. So why, Taka, didn't it come? So the answer is because by Yomim Ohem Kisheves Samelach Achashverosh, you know why it didn't come? Is because we're still not, we have not yet done tshuva for the lack of Shmiras Shabbos. And the same, the connection is the word Bayamim with the word Sheves to a pasuk in Yirmiyah, where it says that I've seen people Bayamim Ohem Reisi V'Yehuda Dorchim Gitois Bashabbos. I see people in Yehuda, they are being Mechalel Shabbos. Shmira Shabbos is critical for the coming of Mashiach for the Gula. As Chazal tells us, if only Klal Yisrael would observe two Shabbosos, Mashiach would come immediately. Okay, the next quick idea is Kesheves HaMelech HaChashverosh. We're going to have, the Targum is going to elaborate Al Kisei Malchuso. Now in our gear, so there is a vav between the word Malchuso and between the Chof and the Sof. However, it appears from some of the commentators that not every Girsa, not every text had the vav. And they have a drasha, don't read a Malchuso, Ella Milachto. Achashverosh was obsessed with the throne of Shlomo HaMelech. The Kisei Shlomo was a magical, a mystical type of throne upon which was mystical. He was obsessed with it, and he wanted that to be his throne. And his advisors told him, don't you dare, because anyone who sits on the throne that does not deserve to sit on the throne can be harmed, can be killed. Paro Necho. Why was he called Paro Necho? He was a lame. Why? Because he sat down on the throne of Shlomo and it injured him. And he was no longer able to walk. His joints were dislocated. So therefore he was afraid to actually sit down on the throne. But what he did was the next best thing, he told his craftsmen, his engineers, to create a replica of the Kisei Shlomo. And it took them 3 years to create a replica. It wasn't, of course, the same thing, but the best that they can do, it took 3 years of work. So now, it was Kesheves, finally 3 years have passed, HaMelech HaChashverosh, Al Kisei Milachto, the throne that he created, that he commissioned his advisors, his craftsmen to make. Okay, we'll